This week could be the perfect storm for the stock market. We are watching the Fed, we're watching earnings, and the consumer. The Fed is going to break their silence in a press conference tomorrow. The market is expecting a quarter point bump as Papa Powell's going to probably keep saying he's going to raise rates until he gets the job done, but we're also expecting that this time he's going to raise, next time he's going to raise, then maybe pause. Anything other than that could be huge for the markets. We know that earnings move markets. This week's going to hear from a group that I'm calling the AAA stock because FANG is dead. My AAA stocks, Amazon, Apple, and Alphabet, they are all reporting on Thursday. We're going to find out if analysts have any idea how these companies are doing. We saw Tesla report better than expected last week, which puts the stock up another 20%. And like Tesla, my three AAA stocks have been up big year to date after a disastrous 2022. But we also are keeping an eye on the U.S. consumer, which has been more resilient than expected. Until now, with inflation still on the rise, we are starting to see consumer spending slow down, which can bring earnings down, which can lead to more layoffs and can drive up that unemployment rate. But still, the unemployment rate not as high as the Fed would like to see. Today on Dumb Money, how we are playing these markets and all of these factors that have investors wondering if we've seen the bottom or if there's more pain ahead. You're listening to the Dumb Money Live podcast.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey there, Dave here along with Chris and Jordan. We are Dumb Money. Welcome to Dumb Money Live. There is an ice storm in Dallas right now. It is canceling tons of flights at DFW. So far, the three of us still have power and internet. So if you appreciate the dedication of us braving the storm this morning and commuting all the way to our home studios to flip on some cameras, do take a second and smash the like button for the YouTube algorithm. Chris, Jordan, Where to begin? The Fed tomorrow, the AAA stocks the next day, the consumer spending slowdown. Take your pick.
I think we got to start with Jordan. I have a pretty strong opinion, but I want to hear Jordan's macro take on the Fed and consumer spending specifically.
Because I've been thinking about this much every entity, day. Right? So I think I think we know what's going to happen. Do they raise a quarter or 50 basis points? I don't know. I don't think they get past 50 to 75 more from where we're currently at. I think we're closer to the end of the hikes than we are to the beginning, obviously. Now, the question is, how long can they hold them high? Are they going to hold them through the end of the year? Do they start cutting in the fourth quarter? I don't think we can know that. I don't think anybody's going to know that for another few months. So I don't think that the Fed is a huge factor here. Unless in their commentary they say something pretty hawkish.
I'll be listening closely to the commentary to see if we can get any kind of a hint on what to see going forward. Because we do, and I think if it's 50, that's going to be a shock. I think it's going to be 25. We're going to see 25 the next time. Yeah. There's inflation has started to do that slow drop off, still increasing, but at a lower rate. So I think that this is the kind of expectation. And if we see anything, that's the news.
Yeah, I think that's the non-event. I think from the three things that we put in our channel description or the show description, it's earnings and it's the consumer. And I think those are the two things we have to keep an eye on.
So I want to get your gauge on the consumer because I've had this talk with so many people. It's fascinating. I own a restaurant. You're involved with a bar, Dave. And I think both of our places have been seeing record numbers every week over week for the past couple months. And that's not just us. And that's a number of places that I'm aware of. So I spoke to a friend who is down in Austin. Now, granted, Dallas and Austin are kind of anomalies of cities in the U.S. right now. Like, we're just benefiting from so much relocation and we're generally doing better than the rest of the country, I think, economically. But he couldn't even get a reservation in Austin. And same thing. I can't get a reservation for a restaurant in Dallas 2 weeks like down the road. It's really weird how we're seeing this recessionary environment, everybody supposedly pulling back on the purse strings, yet are we just not really in a representative place or involved with representative businesses to gauge what's going on? Because you're seeing hit or miss. Some places are doing really well still. with the consumer? Is this like the last, is it like before it gets really bad, people are just like, screw it, I'm going to have some fun?
I mean that, like,
some people are doing really well and some people are doing really poorly. Like, you have layoffs, you've got the, look, the people that are going to your restaurant, Chris, are probably not representative of 70% of people in the United States that are actually getting squeezed really hard still by food prices, by energy prices. I don't think we have really the big energy price issue here in Texas that they have for, say, in California or some of the other states. I still think the consumer is getting squeezed, especially not at the top end.
I just saw a gas price in L.A. that was on a text chain with a bunch of L.A. guys. I think it was like $7.30. And granted, it was not normal for L.A. I think L.A. is $4 to $5. But we, right up until this week in Dallas, we were a tad below $3. We just went above $3 a gallon. So you're right, Jordan. It's, we're just in a different place.
Different place. Look at companies like Tesla cutting prices, right? So they cut the prices of their cars something like 20% for the X and the Y. They bumped the Y back up a little bit, but then they just came out with another incentive for trade-ins that they would have. Well, do you know what it is, Dave? It's some free charging hours.
I don't know what it is, but I do know that price cut was trying to get their cars right at the threshold because they were overpriced for the government incentive, the tax credit that is offered for a limited time. And so they basically lowered the price, and then their demand is now twice their production capacity. It's a great place to be if you're Tesla, which is, I think, why the stock jumped up after that. They said that on the earnings call.
But guys, is it fair to say that, one, the majority of layoffs have happened in the last 2 to 3 weeks? A lot of the layoffs that have happened recently have come with pretty meaningful severance packages. So all the hurt that might or might not come is still ahead of us. It's not like anyone's hurting yet, but it's on the horizon. And a lot of these comments, like I'm seeing a comment right now about currently traveling in Asia and there's tourists everywhere, never seen it this busy. That's likely just a remnant of people not traveling for a while, and they do have to book travel in advance, and they probably didn't book that travel in the last week. It was probably booked a month ago, 2 months ago, 3 months ago, maybe before they got laid off or things weren't as bad. So I think...
Yeah, I don't know about all of Asia. Depends on where, probably. China, for instance, reopening.
They've been shut down forever.
And they're stimulating, and so China's actually probably in a growth mode, right? At least compared to what's going on in the United States.
I'm just saying, guys, I don't think we've seen what the consumer pain might look like. I don't think we'll know that for another couple of months. So I just think that everyone saw the consumer still okay, and the stuff that I'm seeing, like, that's based on yesterday's information. There have been a lot of layoffs. Guys, I know a lot of people, even here in Dallas, a lot of people that have been laid off personally. Yeah. Like, a decent chunk of my personal network has been laid off in the last 2 to 3 weeks. Granted, they have severance packages. I saw one person out at my restaurant a couple days ago. So it's not like they're not going out because they got laid off. Everyone's assuming that they'll be able to get another job. Maybe the severance is actually a net positive in the short run. Because that's something you got to think about, right? In the short run, if someone has confidence that they can get another job, the severance might actually be a net positive, a stimulative, right?
Yeah, essentially, they're double dipping at that point.
Yes.
So we've seen, the headlines are all about the tech layoffs. We've seen Salesforce, we've seen IBM, we've seen all of the tech, but it's also creeping into other sectors. And the thing is, though, unemployment claims overall are still low, and there's still millions of jobs open. So it's like we're in this like weird transitional time that, yes, layoffs are happening, but there are still more jobs out there. It's just a shifting of where they're hiring versus where they're laying off.
But do people at some point, because they've been out of a job for a few weeks now or a month or more in the next coming over the next month, at some point, do they start to get a little more conservative? I know I'm getting more conservative with my spending constantly. And like at some point, do people in mass start to get more conservative with their spending? I think the answer to that question has to be yes. I think unless we see something dramatic happen, I think it probably gets worse, not better, over the next couple months. And to me, if I look at the earnings part of our subject line, that consumer spending has to get worse, I would imagine, over the next month or two, which is going to be a net negative. Let's talk about earnings, because that doesn't necessarily mean that earnings are going to be bad, because I think what we've seen a lot, and this is how investors think, the layoffs, the tightening, companies finally smarting, yes, getting smart after years of excess spending, might actually start to show, especially with supply chain kind of easing up some, right? They might actually start to show better earnings even with a consumer slowdown. Guys, I know this is a lot of conflicting information here.
The thing is, what's going on is that they know that their top line is going to be coming down. And so they're trying to either maintain or grow their EPS. And is that going to work or is it not going to work? Who knows?
Yeah, I will say this. Wage inflation is really tough on a lot of these companies. And that would be my one biggest concern that I think people are not paying close enough attention to. North American Hemp says McDonald's $20 an hour right now. I'm not sure if that's true or not. But I will tell you that in my own restaurant, it's creeping up. Everything has been creeping up. So wage inflation, I think, could be the big kind of black mark on certain companies, especially companies that have, they're very employee centric, right? They're really reliant on tons and tons of employees. And they, for some reason, whatever reason, they're not able to handle, they're not able to have the layoffs that some of these other companies have. So I don't know that McDonald's, right? And they had earnings today, I thought, but I don't know that companies like McDonald's can lay off employees. Like, they're having like excess employees.
Yeah, I mean, they're working on, did you see there was a concept McDonald's store that was zero employees? I thought it was all automated.
No, long term, absolutely. We know it's going in that direction, right? We know it's all going to robotics, but like right now, this quarter, I'm not sure if they're able. Oh, look, McDonald's did drop this week. I'm just not sure they're able to do that much about their employee issue. Now, that said, I was at Pizza Hut last night in the ice storm picking up pizza, and they were struggling with one person in the kitchen. So I guess they could get thinner in certain cases.
I haven't had Pizza Hut in 12 years.
All right, so here's the deal. If you eat it within 60 seconds of getting it at the actual Pizza Hut, which is what I did, it's fine. If you take it home, it's disgusting.
So wait, you went to a pizza place, ate pizza, and then took the rest home? To the family?
I went to Bubba's, closed. Then I went to Chick-fil-A, closed, because the ice storm. Oh. Jimmy John's, closed. And then Pizza Hut was the only place open. I got pizza for all the kids that were staying at my house. But I didn't want nasty Pizza Hut. So I ate mine in the little they had one table. I just sat there and ate it.
I never know that. I know which location you're talking about. I didn't know that anyone ever ate in that location.
They don't.
So is it like in a strip mall?
What?
Is it in a strip mall?
It's across from SMU. So listen, I think I know this sounds terrible because everybody just wants an answer. What's the answer? What are you guys doing? I feel the same way that I felt the last 3 to 4 months, which I guess a little more visibility on the Fed, very little visibility across the board on earnings, even less visibility on consumer spending. I'm just so darn confused these days. I just, in the short term, it's really difficult to have any clue what's going to happen on a macro level to companies like the S&P 500 or tech, I think is exceptionally difficult. I think to use that overused term of being a stock picker, but this is the most important time to be a true stock picker.
You're listening to the Dumb Money Live podcast.
I have no clue what's going to happen to this market in the short run.
But overall, so my thought is I'm bullish. Not aggressively bullish, but I think that we already think that 2023 is going to be better than 2022. I think that Europe is not trending for as hard of a recession. China's coming out of its lockdowns. Is it going to be a hard landing? Is it going to be a soft landing? Is it going to be a worse recession? Nobody really knows, but I feel like we saw the giant bubble and we saw it go down. I just think that for me, I'd rather be in the market and not net short the market, then I think, Chris, you might still be pretty heavily short. I'm not short at all anymore.
I am hedged. My long portfolio is not fully hedged, but pretty well hedged, mostly hedged.
Someone yesterday basically described this as no one can really decide if we're actually in a recession, but I think that we're in a rolling recession. And this was a YouTuber, I think. Basically, different industries are getting hit with the recession at different times, but because they're not all hitting at once, it's not as, like, dire.
Okay, fine. I agree with that. But what do you do? I think there's only one thing to do. We're not financial advisors. This is just what we're doing. So please do your own homework and make your own decisions. But it gets down to the same thing that I've always said. There's no way that I'm not going to be in a company like Lithium America that is developing what will be the, assuming that they get approved in the next couple months with their last approval in Nevada, what will be the preeminent lithium mine for the next 10 to 15 years in North America. That's a company I have to be in, and GM agrees. So GM, anyone's been following Dumb Money has been following our Lithium America journey. It's been a roller coaster, to say the least. But GM just announced today that they were investing $650 million into Lithium America in two tranches. Again, assuming that they do receive the approval, that is not 100% yet. I feel like they probably will. And that will happen in the next couple of months. And GM has also committed to buying 100% of the lithium that they're going to make, which is a crazy deal. I got to dig in deeper to the economics of this deal, quite honestly. I haven't had time this morning, but I knew that was coming. I knew it was just a matter of who and when, not if, some major automotive manufacturer was going to finalize the deal with Lithium America. And sure enough, here we are. It's just GM. Okay, so I have to be in companies like that. I have to be in companies like Novo and Eli Lilly that are on the front end of what I firmly believe is a multi-year pharma cycle that we might have never seen anything like in our entire lifetime of these weight loss and diabetes drugs. So I'm in Novo. Novo has earnings, guys, on tomorrow. I think tomorrow, the first.
Is it?
Yes. And then Eli Lilly has earnings on Thursday. My largest speculative position right now is in Novo and then also Eli Lilly. Now, here's the thing.
Mine is too.
Is there any way to post those screenshots that I sent you? That would be awesome.
Yes, I have that ready to go.
Because I really want people to visualize this. So these are screenshots of web traffic, foot traffic, not foot traffic.
Web traffic, from a source.
This is web traffic to the three large pharma products made by these two companies. Which one is that, Dave?
That's Mounjaro.
Eli Lilly's Mounjaro.
The website probably didn't exist prior to May, and here in December, January, a big uptick.
Look at the pops that we're seeing in January. Now, that's
this is Wegovy.
To be expected because January is the big month and people are thinking about health. But here's the thing. I've said this before. We are seeing a perfect storm of drug capacity increasing, especially at Wegovy. They've had issues with supply chain for a year. Right at the same time that we're in health and dieting month, which is January, right? So it's like the perfect storm. And I'm not really sure the market is really anticipating that degree of a perfect storm. Now, they could only sell what they could make. Supply chain data that some of our community members have been helping us with distributors that are distributing these farmers, it appears that they are selling everything that they can manufacture. In fact, we've gotten some information from the supply chain. And again, I really want to thank the Dumb Money community, you know who you are, that they are restricting allocations to pharmacies right now. So pharmacies are actually getting limited allocations of all of these drugs. What that tells me is that they're selling everything they can manufacture. So the only question I have going into earnings for Novo tomorrow is, one, how good of a job have they done ramping up their manufacturing to kind of somewhat attempt to meet demand? And two, to what degree are these new drugs just taking sales from older diabetic drugs that they've been selling for years? I think that's an area that's really hard to determine. So those are the things I'm looking for. And then three,
refresher, the Wegovy is Novo Nordisk. Mounjaro is Eli Lilly. Victoza and Saxenda are Novo Nordisk. Ozempic, Rybelsus, those are Novo Nordisk. And Trulicity is Eli Lilly. It's a confusing grid to keep track of, and I can't pull that graphic up.
This is my cheat sheet
that you can find on Twitter.
Yeah. Oh, Jordan, one sec. Before you do, my last concern, because I think it's always important to talk about the risk of going into these earnings trades, is it's really difficult to assess the market anticipation of this particular earnings report and what people are expecting. These are obviously trading at like record levels, these stocks. What is the market anticipating? Will they sell off even with a great earnings story? It's really almost impossible to assess that because we've never been in this situation, especially with Novo before, where the stock has run this hard, but also the company is doing that well. So like which will play out tomorrow? I just don't have any idea. But what I'm getting back to is I must own this stock the same way I have to own LAC. I have to own Novo. I just can't be part of this. Even if it pulls back tomorrow, I feel like I have to figure out a way to own more on the pullback.
How about the AAA stocks that are coming out on Thursday? Apple, Amazon, Alphabet.
I'm less confident about those. I still have my Amazon position. It's hedged through my short on the triple Qs, and I think I'm going to place an additional hedge on Amazon with put options against my position. I think so. Not fully, Dave. I'm not gonna fully.
Because Amazon is up nearly 25% year to date. Google up 13, Apple up 12, outperforming the SPY, which we know because they underperform the SPY. So are they getting back to a more normal, their new normal, or are they overpriced? Are the analysts going to have no clue what to expect?
Dave, think about it every day, and I just don't know. Because I don't know, and I look at the data, like I look at even web traffic data on Amazon. I look at web traffic on AWS, and it seems ridiculous. But listen, there's enough engineers on AWS visiting that site every day, and it's an insane. It just doesn't look that good right now. At the same time, I have one of my good friends, Patrick. Our good friend Patrick is telling us that his Amazon business is doing record numbers every month. So yeah. I'm getting conflicting information.
Yeah, so I think it's going to be all about the guide with Amazon. And so what you saw today with UPS is that they had record quarter, right, record growth. But then at the same time, they guided for a pretty weak conclusion to 2023. And so I think you have to balance all that, right? Because does the earning matter or does the guide matter?
And that worries me about Amazon because they don't tend to say anything too exciting. They set the bar low in their future guidance. Even if they had a blowout number, unlike Tesla that beat on earnings like by 12% and then said, oh yeah, and everything's great. I don't ever hear Amazon going, oh, this is such an exciting time for us. It's, oh yeah,
that will never get better,
but we have a bunch of headwinds. Headwinds. Don't do it.
Yeah, so they're going to say headwinds. They're going to say, because Amazon actually does have insane inflationary cost issues. Remember, when we did the analysis on Amazon this last year, the number one concern was they were in the worst possible place in terms of having to deal with the trucking, having to deal with energy prices skyrocket. This is all on their shoulders, and it makes me nervous as an Amazon investor. Also, I know enough about those earnings calls to know they're not going to pump the stock. We know that. And also on top of that, Jeff Bezos and his ex-wife might sell another huge chunk right after earnings when that window opens up because they're funding mission to Mars or rockets, or she wants to donate another $10 billion or $20 billion to charity. And like, those are all headwinds for me as an Amazon investor. So anytime I see Amazon starting to do pretty well going into earnings like I do right now, it makes me want to hedge my position into earnings, right? Like, I just think there's more. But who knows? This is an interesting comment, Stephen Malek. I think Jassy has to announce something positive and has to make his mark. I could see a buyback or something. Okay, that's another take. But it all comes down to the fact that I think it's almost impossible to have any confidence going into Amazon, Google, like these big tech earnings that are coming up. It could be a disaster, or maybe they do something with the cost cutting and buybacks to prop up their stock. Who the hell knows? Nobody knows. You just can't have a lot of confidence going into earnings this week, right? You have to be
cautious. I've had a comment on Novo and Eli Lilly, Chris. Nothing too crazy. I was talking to somebody that is actually on, what's the Lilly one? The Mounjaro?
Mounjaro.
He gets a coupon. Like all of his friends that take it, they've got like a coupon that they get somewhere and they pay $25 a month for this.
Okay, well,
and there's also the compounding pharmacies that are making their own.
There's that. Yeah. But I'm talking specifically about the name brand ones. But
so Jordan, for coupons, that coupon, get coupons the $25 thing,
so even literally, for Wegovy, you can get coupons.
It does not. I have
don't
yet
think people
to
are paying this full pop price for. Now, how long does this last? I don't know.
No, Jordan, that's not how it works. That's not how it works.
Full price for this.
No, Jordan, you get a coupon for $500 for your first month. And what they say, I think he misunderstands. What they say is.
He's been on it for 10 months, and apparently he's not paid more than like $50 per month.
No, that's not right. The only way that's possible, Jordan, is if his insurance, listen to me, if his insurance is subsidizing the difference.
I don't think that's the case.
The lowest price that you can get, that they are getting, okay, is about $1,100. So you can get it as low as $25. And very rare for people to do that. They happen to be on one of the very rare insurance plans that with the coupon, any insurance combined, your cost would be
$25. I don't think there's any insurance coverage.
And the other thing,
he told me it's off-label because he doesn't have diabetes.
Yeah, because Eli Lilly has not been approved for a weight loss drug yet. So if you're taking a name brand you're taking it off label if you're taking the name brand Eli version because they're still in FDA approval phase.
Almost everybody that's actually taking one of the branded drugs here are paying north of $1,000 a month. It's almost unheard of that I've seen someone paying under for one of the name brand drugs unless
JJ Hawkins said there's a $25 coupon code regardless of insurance.
That's not true.
Like a promotion that they're doing to try to get people hooked onto it. I'm just wondering what is the impact going to be for earnings?
It's not true. It's just false information.
Wait, but I've had people tell me this and that all of their friends are using this and that they're not paying more than they're not paying.
Okay. So here's the thing. If you go on TikTok and you type in Mounjaro coupon, okay, you will literally see thousands of people talking about what they're paying. And it's just right there, like real people talking about this, what they're paying, exactly what they're paying. They literally detail out in videos.
Yeah.
You might find someone that's capable of doing that, but it's very dumb.
Here is on Mounjaro's website. You may pay as little as $25 for a 1 month or 3 month prescription. See how the savings card works. But that's not a 10 month prescription.
That seems
I've
really
I've never heard of anything beyond that, just the intro period. But it's exceptionally difficult. Most people are paying more. The bigger concern here are the number of people that are going to compounding pharmacies, which is not a small number. It's a lot.
Because you can get the drug for a generic version of the drug for $200 a month instead of $12.
Yeah, I haven't seen anyone.
I saw one on GetHenry. If you go to GetHenry, you can get an off-label for $200 a month.
I've seen as low as $300, $500, $800. I've seen in that range from like $300 to $800. I'll check out the off-label.
Henry was $200. Possibly, or whatever that site is.
But also, Jordan, that might be for a really low dosage. So like that might be for like a 0.25 and the average person.
I didn't recognize the dosage.
Yeah, the dosage that you end up on is more than 10 times that once you get up after a couple months. So it might be like the intro super low dosage, which doesn't do hardly anything. So that's where some of these things get tricky. But I can tell you this, the biggest issue with these drugs is the cost and the vast majority. I'm talking like 95% of people that are getting the name brand ones are all paying $1,000 a month or north of that for these things. It's very difficult to get it for less than that. Otherwise, everybody would be paying $25 a month, and you wouldn't be able to get this drug anywhere because, like, everybody would be rushing to get them for $25.
I'm wondering if that's why they had such a problem getting the supply out because people are just rushing and trying to pay as little as possible while they still can.
Like I said, the coupons that they're offering, I think there's a misunderstanding, and I like to see maybe he has health insurance that brings it all the way down, because the only way that I've seen to get it down that low is if your insurance provider subsidizes the difference between their coupon and the $25. And yeah. Some insurers will pay like $1,000 a month for this. So your cost is $25 a month. But without your insurance, and most insurance doesn't cover this at all, or if they cover it, it's a very small amount. So almost everybody is paying in that like $1,100 to $1,300 a month for all of these drugs. That's just what it is. And by the way, there's thousands of people talking about what they're paying across TikTok using these coupons. So I think it'd be real. Your buddy might have some amazing health insurance. I don't know who he works for, but maybe.
Again, it's not insurance. It's off-label prescribed. He said he's not using insurance.
That's crazy.
You're listening to the Dumb Money Live podcast.
I wonder if they have a program where X number of people, based on income and various other things and what they have, qualify for the ultra low, and they just end up subsidizing a small number of people.
That it would make sense if you're having a prescribed for diabetes to have a lower price version available, which is why they're trying to get this weight loss specific version approved so that they can have that be the high price version. But yeah, there are several different, anywhere from 2.5 to 15 milligrams a dosage for Mounjaro. And I guess you could, for your diabetes off-label version, get the highest version and get it for $25. But apparently that's a limited time, 3-month offer.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what shows on the internet, at least when I was looking at it here. So I think, yeah, that's what they're advertising.
Yeah, I saw that too, and I looked into it, and I couldn't find hardly anybody that was actually paying that much. And people were complaining about it left and right. They're like, oh, this is a scam. It's like, they make you think that it's cost this much, but nobody can actually get it. So yeah. there's something there as to maybe some people, maybe he was early, I don't know, maybe he got...
Yeah, language like you may pay as little, it makes me think that you're probably going to pay more. Just that he told me that he is using it at that rate, and that he's got several other of his friends that are using it at that rate, kind of raised my concern.
Interesting.
It'll be very interesting. I think it'll be interesting to see if Novo, on their earnings call, which is, what, is it tomorrow? If they talk about the pricing, if they talk about the discounting, if they talk about the impact on that versus their supply chain versus the ability to actually even fill the prescriptions. So Nordisk is the, I'm not in Lilly, I'm in Nordisk, and that's the one that I'm thinking, just because they have the products currently for on-label weight loss, that's where I'm most excited about the investment.
Dave, I think so the reason to be in Illy as well, and the reason why I'm in Illy, is Mounjaro, people are just taking what they want for any reason that they want. Like most, it seems like most of the people on Mounjaro are just on it for weight loss, and they just don't care. And these doctors, between the internet doctors right now, we talked about this, the prescribing pharmacies, like anybody can basically get anything they want. It's just so easy that they're going on TikTok. They're finding, everyone's like, oh, Mounjaro works slightly better, right? So everybody wants the best. They have another one coming out that works even better. So that's why Eli Lilly technically right now is in the long term might end up having the number one solution here. Although Nordisk does have their version of like a 2.0 of this drug that will be just as good, if not even a little better than theirs. It comes out after their next wave of drugs over the next 2 years. So I just want to be in both of them. It's really difficult to determine which one's going to do better, which one can manufacture more, which one can get more of their drug into the hands of more people. I just think at this point, there's such a supply shortage that people will take whatever they can get. I am super concerned about the compounding pharmacies, though, and I don't know if they're going to discuss that on tomorrow's call, because, guys, I don't know the percentage of people that are using this off of compounding pharmacies, but I actually think now it could be double digits or
great.
Higher.
If you just take the two factors, this is a super expensive drug that you can get for way less if you just buy it a different way. And it's just readily available. Like there's supply chain issues with the real thing. And there's less of a supply chain issue if you go to a compounding pharmacy.
Every med spa in every corner shopping mall in America, and how many med spas are there's med spas everywhere. Like yeah. they used to be doing Botox injections, and now they're prescribing diabetes drugs. Like it's the weirdest thing in the world, or fulfilling. I don't want to say prescribing. They're, you know, handling and fulfilling the prescription, right, that you probably got from an internet doctor. So it's the game has changed, and this, we've never seen this before in pharma. I don't know how big of a negative impact that will be long term for them, or how they fight that in court. I just don't understand how they're going to deal with that. Or does their drug get cheap enough to where it doesn't really matter at some point? Maybe the way that it works is once insurance companies get involved, maybe the insurance companies ultimately won't accept the compounding pharmacy. I don't know. Maybe they will. Maybe they will only accept the actual name brand drugs because maybe the insurance companies don't want to get in trouble for using something that's supposedly patented by Nordis. For now, I don't care. I'm in the stock. I'm looking forward to earnings
and
tomorrow.
Just for the record, in 23 states and DC, nurse practitioners have full prescriptive authority and can prescribe medicine on their own. So that's where these med spas can actually, in 23 states, they can do the prescription and fulfillment right in-house, right alongside the Botox injector.
And they're making so much money. It's wild. Like, prices are, like we're saying, they're charging a few $100 to $800 a month. And they're getting thousands of people through these med spas, and they're on a subscription business. Have they ever had? Can we invest in like these med spas? Because
I'm looking.
They're
publicly traded supply companies for med spas. I'm looking for a publicly traded. Chat down in the comments if you know of a public med spa company.
Where
it has
is
a
show
big footprint?
You never know.
In 23 states.
You never know. The only reason why I say that is if you think about a med spa, it's really like service oriented. Like you go in, you get like Botox injections, you get there's work. They have all that like the machinery and they do stuff to you. But this is just something really quick every month, huge money, $500, $600, $700, $800 a month is what they're charging. And
wait, how much? Henry was $200.
Like I said, Jordan, the people that I'm speaking to that are going to med spas in the DFW area are all paying. At the very lowest I've heard was $300. Most people are paying $500 to $600 and upwards of $800 to $900 a month. And I'm talking to a lot of people that are doing this. So I don't know of anyone that's getting it at $200. And again, it might be the type of thing, Jordan, where it's like the lowest dose, like 0.25 or something like that. And so it just, I don't know what they're doing, but it's not that easy just to get $200 a month. Otherwise, everybody would be doing it. And I'll tell you this, these are not lazy people that are, like, these people are doing deep research. There's forums where people are discussing how to shave a little bit money off your prescription, and they look at every single provider, like every single way to get it, all the coupons, and it's different for everyone based on what state you're in. And they're comparing, like, you can use this here or that there. Like, they're serious about saving money, and I haven't really seen a lot of people getting this for $25 a month or even $200 a month. So there's some disconnect there, but I'll look into it.
ChatGPT gave me one that actually is not ChatGPT just made up information and gave it to me because that is not a real stock.
It's what it does.
This is my new way of doing any riches. Just asking ChatGPT. Oh, it's too busy now.
Sodium batteries are the future. Why invest in LAC? I think when you start talking about new battery tech, you have to get speculative, right? So fine, if you want to have a speculative bet on some alternative battery tech, that's fine. But it takes what we've learned from LAC over the past decade. It takes an unbelievable amount of time to synthesize new battery tech and to mine and get those things done and approved and actually all the way through the supply chain, tested over a long period of time and eventually scaled out for industry sectors such as automotive. So
I think even changes in lithium battery tech take a long time to filter their way up through the supply chain and get the technology flushed out, like you're saying. And maybe there are better batteries out there at scale. Yeah, lithium is the play right now.
When I first started doing analysis on lithium, I heard a lot of talk around, it'll be better battery tech that will make lithium obsolete. And I did a lot of research down that road, and I walked away thinking, okay, none of this stuff is going to pan out for a very long time. I have no concerns about demand for lithium, at least over the next 5 to 10 years. Yeah. Not a concern for me. Yeah, it's all about testing and scaling and supply chain, and it's very difficult when it comes to battery tech. Bottom line here, I have no clue what the macro market is going to do, just like I didn't have a clue a month ago or 3 months ago. So I'm going to remain partially hedged. I am a little bit nervous about the big tech earnings this week. I just don't have a clue if they're going to be positive or negative. I don't think anybody does. It really depends on the subtleties of those calls. Are there buybacks? Are there headwinds? Are things not as bad as people thought they were going to be? Are they saving money due to the layoffs? I just have no idea. There's too many factors, too many variables. I'm going to hedge.
I think it's a little of all of that. I think it's a little of all of that. And for me, because of that, long term, I'm going to be in these stocks anyway, so I'm not going to even bother hedging for a short term gain or complete loss of my insurance policy from puts.
That's fine. I'm going to continue to look for old school social arb trades. There's a handful I'm working on right now. A lot of starts. Most of them don't make their way through the funnel to the point where I want to invest in them or talk about them on this show. But working on a lot of things right now. The community, if you guys have anything for us, please share them in the Dumb Money Discord, which is dumbmoney.tv/Discord. We have a research and trade channel on the Discord and also a high conviction report. If you want to write it up in a report and share it, we'd really appreciate it. I will go back to saying that if somebody brings us something that I ultimately invest in and think is really good, we used to Venmo out cash, like $250, $500, $1,000, depending upon the idea. I'll continue to do that, and we'll start doing that again if I see anything in there that I like. So please share your thoughts with the community and us. And we have an interesting show later this week, actually. Dave, I forgot about that.
Yeah, on Friday, we're going to be talking all about the kind of alternative collectible space, like the alternative asset classes. And we have a special guest. Do we talk about it? Do we reveal it, or do we tease it?
Yeah, I think we need to tease it because there actually are some alternative investments that I have been looking at that I want to ask him about on Friday's show. We have this,
and these aren't NFTs. You're not buying more milking cats, are you?
No, they do.
But maybe a Pokemon card or two.
No, I'm not investing in crypto or NFTs right now. I am looking at a couple collectible card investments. I think there's some interesting stuff happening right now in the collectible space, and we have the perfect guest to talk about it. Founder and CEO of Rally, it's called Rally now. It used to be called Rally. This guy sees everything, right? Like, they're out there accumulating alternative assets from art to trading cards, to sports cars, to fine whiskeys, right? And scotches. There's just so much. I don't know.
I'm invested in a couple. Are you an investor in Rally?
I'm an investor in Rally. Yeah, early investor in Rally. And a lot of these alternative collectible assets have come down significantly over the past 6 to 9 months in price. So where are there opportunities now? Where did the industry throw the baby out with the bathwater? Those will be some of the questions I think we'll be asking him on Friday, because Rally is out there trying to accumulate these assets for Rally that they think will be advantageous. So they have a whole team focused on these asset categories. And I think it's something we don't talk about a lot on this show, but it is an area of investing that we should all be aware of, at least, whether or not we want to participate in it. So that's coming this Friday, something a little bit.
If you guys have any questions for the founder and CEO of Rally, go ahead and don't put it in the live chat. Put it in the actual comments as soon as those are available on the replay, because that way we can go through and ask questions from the audience. I think that'll be the best way to handle
Batman
that.
Batman just sold for $2 million. So there are still people spending some easy money on collectible assets. Join us this Friday, and we'll definitely do a Q&A if you want to ask the founder CEO of Rally some questions this Friday. Is that at 12 p.m. Eastern, Dave?
It is 12 Eastern, 11 Central, our normal time, our normal channel. This is one that I thought was really cool, and I think I bought shares of this. This is a copy of the Declaration of Independence from 1776, and I own a small piece of it.
Yeah, for those of y'all that don't know what Rally is, they basically are a fractional investment company for alternative assets. So you can buy like $10 worth of a $2 million comic or baseball card or Ferrari or, I don't know, the Constitution. What is that thing?
Yeah, it's not, I mean, that's just too cool. How could you not? How could you not want to own the Constitution?
It's pretty cool.
Or the
I don't know. I think when I think about, I want to save some of the conversation for Friday. But I think when you think about alternative investments and especially collectible investments, I think it's all about writing the demographic and the trend in like the aging of that demographic, right? Certain people like certain things, and when they get certain amounts of money in their career, they're more likely to accumulate those things and the asset prices go up, and then they get older and retire and their kids don't want those things, so they crash. So for me, that's how I approach this entire sector is who are the people that are about to turn age, I don't know, 35 or 40 that finally have some excess cash, what are they going to want to buy? And those are the things that are likely to go up in value over the next 5 years. Just it's happened in the car market.
Wait for the next bubble too, because these assets tend to just fly when everyone has too much money.
Totally. Is it scotch? Is it watches? Like what's the next?
Scotch or whiskey on here. A 40-year-old whiskey that has a $40,000 market cap? What?
Yeah, man. People love their vintage whiskey. I don't understand it, but people love that stuff, dude.
Wait, so you pay money for the whiskey, but you don't get it.
You get to visit it in the museum.
Yes. Jordan, you get to sell. So what happens is people come in and make buyout offers. And when it sells, then you can profit off of that as a fractional share owner. Or you can sell your fractional shares, I think, once a month. So like once a month, the window opens up for that item. And you could either buy more shares or sell shares. It's not liquid.
I've got to share this comment. I'm just trying to get enough to live stocks to live on the beach. And Dave is buying the Constitution.
First of all, it was the Declaration of Independence.
I know. I got it wrong. I might also own some Constitution. I don't know.
Let me answer a couple questions. I still have my Matthew Stafford trading card. I don't think it's doing too well. And then two, I am not interested in NFTs really right this second until a platform comes out that will broadly bring more people to the NFT space. And until we fully understand how NFTs are going to play out in terms of utility and functionality for that kind of next wave of NFT holders or investors. And I think those are just all question marks. And until I have visibility around that and we have investment platforms to bring more people in and this world gets easier and makes more sense, I'm not investing in NFTs other than maybe a CryptoPunk here or there if they get cheaper.
Yeah, I was just looking to see what the floor price is these days. So for $100,000, you can get a CryptoPunk, Chris, or $105,000 for a Bored Ape.
Yeah.
Those have held up better than I thought. That's still dramatically lower from where you're buying them and where I bought my CryptoPunk. But still, that's better than I thought. If I could sell my CryptoPunk for $100,000.
Like $30,000, both of mine. But yeah, I agree. They're lower. But again, my head's not there right now. Not with this market where it is. I think there's better opportunities that are liquid financial assets that actually have growth value to them. I prefer to invest in equities.
We'll talk about more stocks and more collectibles Friday for sure. And if you're interested in that, do write your questions out and put it in the actual comments on this video.
Awesome. Layoffs won't show for 3 to 5 months anyway. 3 to 6 months.
Employment's that's always a lagging indicator. So
I agree. Yeah.
And it's a number the Fed looks for. So that's the sign that even if inflation starts to dip until it gets to 2%, he's not going to totally pivot and start reducing rates.
No. Can we just all agree that nobody knows anything this week? We're just going to have to figure it out when it gets announced. And anyone out there claiming to know what's going to happen with any of these big earnings or how the market's going to react to them or the Fed or consumer behavior or earnings, I think it's just taking a shot at the dark. So just be aware of that. Know what you don't know.
That's going to do it for this one.
We'll see you Friday.